Please pray with me. May the words of my mouth and the meditation of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O God. Amen. We're all familiar with a loaded question. You know, one where it feels like there's more at stake than what is stated explicitly. I remember a job interview where I was asked who some of my favorite authors were. I completely froze, mentally scanning through the implications of claiming this author or that as a favorite. The question felt loaded, like it might tie me to a writer that the hiring committee could find objectionable. In hindsight, I'm sure it didn't look great that I couldn't come up with a single author I liked. But hey, I still got the job, so it's okay. Loaded questions might be more accurately called iceberg questions. You can only see the question, but there's a whole lot going on underneath that might sink you, especially if you don't know that it's there. Jesus is asked an iceberg question in our passage today. Beneath the surface, where our 21st century eyes may not see, are the different sects of Judaism and their understanding of important issues like authority, tradition, and most importantly, resurrection. Sadducees recognized the Torah, that is the first five books of the Bible, as their sole authority, disregarding any authority of the Psalms, prophets, or the oral tradition of Judaism. In this respect, Jesus has more in common with the Pharisees than the group questioning him today, as Jesus frequently references the Psalms and prophets in his teachings. The key difference between the Sadducees and Jesus for our reading from this morning is that the Sadducees did not believe in a literal life after death, whereas resurrection was a central part of Jesus' teaching. More than once, Jesus told the disciples that he would die and rise again. But the Sadducees did not see resurrection spelled out in the Torah. So for them, the only possibility of life after death was through the lives of one's descendants. Which brings us to the question they posed to Jesus. A question meant to put him on the spot, expose the logical fallacy of his teachings, and frankly, embarrass him. Whose wife will this woman with seven husbands be? To reveal more of the iceberg beneath the surface of this loaded question, we must understand the practice of levirate marriage, something we talked about last Advent when we read the story of Tamar. According to the Torah, if a man died childless, it was the responsibility of his brother to marry the surviving widow and have a child with her. This child would be an heir to the deceased, carrying on his name and also receiving his property as inheritance. Now, these Sadducees take this provision, which was almost certainly intended to protect widows and strengthen families, and they stretch it to an absurd extreme. Seven times this poor woman marries and buries her husband, and yet remains childless. It's hard not to notice that no one in this group gives thought to her misfortune. She's simply a caricature to expose a flaw in Jesus' teaching. Their question is not about her well-being or comfort in the age to come, but rather, which of these seven imagined brothers will get to have her? Now, the Sadducees believe their scenario exposes the irrationality of resurrection. As if because a woman cannot be shared by seven men, the resurrection cannot be true. Now, we can think of other issues that are hard for us to square with a theology of resurrection, such as, what age will I be in heaven? The age I am when I die? Do I get to choose? Or is it just random? Lord, please don't make me be 13 again. For those in the disabled community, questions arise like, will I have my disability in heaven? Would I still be authentically me without it? But just because we, or the Sadducees, do not understand these things does not mean resurrection is not true. Human imagination is always hampered by the limitations of our own experiences. Our grandparents could never have imagined a day when you wouldn't need a map in your glove box. But here we are. Likewise, our children, listen up kids, cannot conceive of a time when television programs ran according to a schedule, and if you missed it, you missed it, and you could put a tape in the VCR. Yes, a VCR, we'll explain that later. And it may or may not record because the little tab might have been broken out. I mean, it just was not great. But we all remember, don't we? The Sadducees' hypothetical scenario emerges from a perspective too narrow to entertain how an age to come might differ from their day. And Jesus shows that just because we lack the frame of reference to understand does not make resurrection untrue. Biblical scholar Jim Edwards writes helpfully, "Heavenly realities are no more predicated on earthly experience than postpartum life is predicated on life in utero. Could a fetus ever conceive of what life is like out here on the other side? Of course not. Likewise, humankind cannot conceive of the age to come. But Jesus does let us in on one difference between our age and the one to come. In the one to come, there will be no more death. And because of that, there's no need for procreation. Nothing needs to be repopulated when nothing dies. And so Jesus answers the Sadducees' question. Marriage is only a part of this age. The woman who has mourned seven husbands and all the while remained without child will belong to none of them in the age to come. Every one of us will belong only to our Creator. Now, Jesus answered the loaded question, but he didn't stop there. He went on to correct the misunderstandings just beneath the surface. Part of that question's load was to expose the limits of Jesus' claim of resurrection. But Jesus is not embarrassed nor chastened by the absurd scenario. And despite their bad faith, Jesus invites them to see resurrection even in their own source of authority, the Torah. Jesus continues, "And the fact that the dead are raised, Moses himself showed in the story about the bush, where he speaks of the Lord as the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." Jesus is, of course, referring to that story of the burning bush when Moses is told to take off his sandals because he's standing on holy ground. And the voice from the bush identifies itself not with a name, that comes later due to Moses' nerves, but the voice identifies itself by connecting itself to Moses' ancestors. The voice says, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. But these men have been dead a long, long, long time. Still, the voice speaks of them in the present tense. The voice does not say, 'I am the God your ancestors followed once upon a time.' No, Yahweh says, 'I am their God.' Not was, am." Jesus says this is evidence from the Sadducees' own source material that resurrection is true, and that Moses even knew it to be true. Yahweh is the God of Abraham. Yahweh is the God of Isaac. Yahweh is the God of Jacob. This demonstrates, says Jesus, that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob remain alive to God. And since they obviously were not still alive in this age, there must be one yet to come. Now, the scribes, who were apparently overhearing this discussion, are persuaded by Jesus' teachings, and they respond, "Teacher, you have spoken well." But as is often the case, we don't get to know if the Sadducees came to accept a life beyond the material world they inhabit. Like our grandparents, unable to fathom a day when Siri tells us how to get places, will the Sadducees now be able to imagine that there is an age they cannot conceive of? And if they are not persuaded now by Jesus' words, will they be persuaded when the news breaks that the one whom the Romans crucified lives and walks once again with his disciples? Because so far, the Sadducees have also only seen and heard the tip of the iceberg of who Jesus is. They don't know what's yet in store, just below the surface of Jesus' teachings and healings. They do not know how these things will lead him to Jerusalem, to a cross, to humiliation and death. And they do not know that he will be raised by the power of God to inaugurate the new age of which he's spoken throughout his ministry, one governed by God's kingdom values. Likewise, even from our vantage point on this side of the resurrection, there is still so much beneath the surface yet to be revealed to us. We also don't know much about an age to come, only that we hope to be a part of it. And so we continue to trust in the tip of the iceberg, revealed to us through prophets, apostles, the cross, and an empty tomb. Looking forward to that age yet to come where death will be no more and we will dwell in God's presence forever. Thanks be to God. Amen.